All right, this will be the Eighth Commandment, Part 13. Thou shalt not steal, whether you're an individual, a corporation, and or government. In the previous message, I began, if you will, what is a short series. And yes, it will be a short series within the series, if you will, on government theft in particular. And there's probably nothing that demonstrates the superiority of Yah's laws and His kingdom, and yea, His government, than to compare, or better put, to contrast it with any man-made government at any given time. And yes, I will include that man-made government that came about, that was the beginning of the United States of America in the 1700s. Any government at any time, and yes, including 21st century Americas as well. Surprise, surprise. But somebody may think, you know, if this was to reach the ears of the average Christian or the average church today, somebody would probably be wondering, well, what are you talking about government for, preacher? You know, of all things, you know, Christians, we just don't deal with that. Well, regrettably, modern Christianity has been convinced, and better word for that is hoodwinked, into believing that Christians are not to be involved in government affairs in any fashion. Although it is interesting, and we had talked about this as a family a little bit after last week's service, that it is interesting that though that is the position of the majority of Christians today, that Christians are not to be involved in government affairs, that it's interesting that nonetheless that Christians so desperately want a Christian as president of this country. So much so that someone like George Bush can come along and just simply claim he's a Christian, much the same as Jimmy Carter did. And Christendom is just by that claim alone, wants it so badly that they're willing to follow him wherever he leads without so much as even a cursory examination into his claim as whether he really qualifies to be a Christian or not. And then they also see everything that he does through that filter. And no matter what he does, if they even check into it, but whatever it does is through this filter that he's a Christian and therefore he can do no wrong. Interesting. Nevertheless, the usual Christian stance, in spite of the fact they haven't realized there's any consistency there, but the usual Christian stance is government is of this world. And Christians are to be kingdom-minded. And that's right. That is, kingdom in heaven minded. And I do agree that America's government is something of this world, on the order of the New World Order. But the reason it is, let's not miss this, the reason it is for the very reason that Christians have abdicated, have abandoned government to the non-Christians and the Antichrists. And because they have perverted and they've wrested the kingdom in heaven that the Bible talks about to the kingdom, excuse me, the king, did I say in? Should have said of if I didn't. The kingdom of heaven that the Bible talks about, they have perverted that to the kingdom in heaven. And because for the most part they have thrown away Yahweh's laws and His morality in exchange for man's laws and man's immorality. It's no wonder that today's government is in the sad state of affairs that we find it today. And by the way, this hands-off approach to government by Christians is a fairly new phenomenon. Let me assure you, that certainly wasn't the approach that Christians took to government in the first century A.D., even though that's sometime further back, that the apostles and the disciples took. Go read again Acts chapter 17, verse 6 and 7, and numerous other passages. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, and some of the verses found therein comes to mind as well, and many others. Nor was it the approach, coming a little bit closer to our time, nor was it the approach to government taken by most of America's ministers in the 1600s here in America and the early 1700s. And that's why King George, just like king, whoever it was, Herod or otherwise, in the first few centuries of Christianity, and especially in the first century Christianity. But that's why King George despised America's early preachers above all else. They were the ones, because they were the ones, it's historical fact, that they were the ones who were fomenting the Revolutionary War that separated America from England. And therefore, he attempted to have them replaced with his own self-appointed episcopal lackeys. The early American version of the 501c3 government issue preachers that we have today. And many of them there without even knowing that that's what they are. And think about it. If you're a government involved in matters that transgress Yahweh's laws, you don't want preachers around that who are going to be pointing that out, because it tends to cause discontent among the populace, just like it did in the early 1700s. And so what better way to limit or to constrain or control the preachers than to first convince them that government affairs are none of their affairs? You know, this whole idea of separation of church and state. And then add to that this world, Christians, is not your home. So keep your nose out of our worldly affairs, because it's none of your affair. And then, just in case some of them might wake up and realize that Yahweh actually commissioned Christians to be the light to the world and the salt of the earth, the government has licensed the preachers, just in case that day ever comes, that they might keep them under their control. And don't think that they haven't already done it. There's already been cases where they've done just that. After all, think about this. Whoever provides the license, the licensor, also provides the guidelines with which the licensee must conduct himself. Does he not? Sure he does. Now, presently, the government has very little to worry about, because the majority of Christendom has made the government one of their many gods, one of their many Baals, and again, without even realizing it in many cases, doesn't make it any less a fact. They just don't know that they're doing it. But have made the governments one of their many gods or Baals, to whom they do unquestioning obeisance and obedience. But, once again, just in case those same preachers begin to awaken from their slumber, the government can, with that license, then threaten them with behave, or we'll take that tax-exempt status or license away from you, and your congregation will find somewhere else to tithe. It's already happened here in America on more than one occasion. Tex Mars faced it not too long ago. Of course, the best thing that today's churches could do is to get rid of their 501c status or anything else that makes them subservient to government rather than to Yahweh. Because once again, whom you are subservient to is whom your God is. And they are subservient to Yahweh in certain areas, but certainly not in all areas, because they've also become subservient to government that is in opposition to God in other areas. You know, it's no wonder that the United States government finds itself antithetical and in many cases, more often than not, antagonistic to Yahweh and His ways, His laws, and His morality, including as it pertains to the eighth commandment, thou shalt not steal. It's no wonder. The problem is not so much government, once again, it's Christianity. Christianity is the problem. Because they have removed themselves from that sphere that God intends them to be, if anywhere, the salt of the earth and the light to the world. Now, in the previous message, I addressed in some detail four principal ways in which today's U.S. government has stolen all the property, all the land from private individuals, and them being public lands, its claim to eminent domain, property taxes, and inheritance taxes. But I assure you that the present government steals in more ways than just those four slick or sophisticated means, or by those four slick or sophisticated means. How about, and I mentioned as I ended last message, and we haven't even begun to talk about the graduated income tax, but how about the graduated income tax that Americans are subservient to as well? Now, I don't intend to get into all the particulars concerning the IRS and how, according to their own codes, that the income tax is voluntary, not obligatory or mandatory, and all the rest that a lot of people like to get into when it comes to the IRS and the graduated income tax that comes along with a discussion of its legality because, quite frankly, I'm not all that interested in its legality, or more particularly its illegality. What I'm interested in is the lawfulness, or more specifically, the unlawfulness of the graduated income tax. And the only way to determine its lawfulness or unlawfulness is, of course, to address the graduated income tax by the laws of the one and only lawgiver. Now, to begin with, does the Bible provide for a graduated income tax? Now, before we answer that question, let's break it down into three different parts in reverse order. Number one, does the Bible provide for any tax whatsoever? Number two, does the Bible provide for tax on income? And number three, does the Bible provide for a graduated tax? All right, let's take them one at a time. Question number one, does the Bible provide for any tax whatsoever? Well, I answered that question in the last message in the affirmative, if you'll remember. In Romans chapter 13 and verse 7, for example, Paul wrote, to render tribute or tax, depending on what version you might be reading, to whom tribute or tax is due. The operating phrase again being, to whom tax is due. Taxes, in other words, are not necessarily due to someone just because they claim it's their due. Furthermore, if taxes are due only to those to whom they are due, then it's a given also, and this takes some real brilliant thinking here, that only taxes due are due. Amen? Which brings us then to question number two. Does the Bible provide for a tax on income? Well, let's begin by asking the question, just what is income? And if you were to ask that question of the majority of people today, they'd probably go to a dictionary, a modern dictionary, and let's go find out exactly what that means. So let's do that. Random House Webster's 2000s edition of the College Dictionary has this definition. This is the newest one I could come up with from at home. It says income, quote, listen to this. It says the monetary payment received for goods or services or from other sources such as rents or investments, revenue or receipts. And most people probably would think that even before they go and check it out with the 2000 edition of Webster's College Dictionary. Also, here's another one from my handheld Franklin Wordmaster. Now, I've had this for several years, but it's fairly current. And it says, amount received or gained usually measured in money, or at least what they call money today. So, according to those definitions, taxable income would be the aggregate, the gross or the sum of everything taken in or received disguised today as money. But once again, with that definition in mind, does the Bible, now that we understand today's definition for income, does the Bible anywhere provide for one's income with those definitions in mind to be taxed? Does anybody know anywhere in the Bible that provides for such a tax? Raise your hand. Now, I think I could ask that question throughout all of Christendom. There's lots of questions that we'd get a lot of different answers on, but this one I think everybody would agree that if they know their Bible, they'd say, I don't know of any passage anywhere in the Bible that provides for a tax on income as defined in those two definitions. And therefore, because a graduated income tax, or a tax on income, let's just leave it there, is unauthorized by Yahweh. It is the unauthorized by Yahweh, the one and only lawgiver, according to his word. It is therefore an unlawful tax. Is it an illegal tax? Well, that's something for somebody else to deal with, because I'm not concerned about illegal. I'm concerned about unlawful. And because God did not authorize it anywhere, thank you, it is indeed unlawful. Well, if we've already established that all taxes aren't unbiblical, so if it's not one's income that's to be taxed according to the Bible, then what is? Well, in last week's message, if you remember, I also discussed that in an agronomist society as they had during the Old Testament days, that the property, and as it should be in any society, the property was never to be taxed. But instead, only the increase or profits from said property. But today, not only does the government tax all the property, but also, in many instances, the entire income derived from one's property or skills. And as, if you remember the poem that I ended with, you know, the further we get into this, the more you can see how true that poem was. I mean, the government, when governments are such as we have today, when governments are governments of man, they don't get better. They only get worse. Now, you may have a government that's better than other governments, but I guarantee you, if it's a government of man, it will get worse. That's the only direction it can go. If you have a government of God, it's not a matter of question of worse or better. It's just the best, the only thing that is perfect. So, not only do they tax the property, but then they come and they tax the any income made on that property as well. With, of course, deductions. Because somebody's going to say, well, they do allow deductions. Deductions for legitimate business expenses, that is, if you own a business. And, of course, the government determines. It's the government that determines what's a legitimate deduction or not. In contrast, to be liable for a biblical tax, a person has to have gainful property, property that garners during that time period a profit, or by extension be gainfully employed. But let's face it, not all employment today is gainful. You know, some employment just manages to get the bills paid, and there's some employment that doesn't even get that far. And therefore, biblically, only those who make a profit or a gain, an increase, as the Bible speaks of it, are liable for the tax. Furthermore, if you think about it, today's tax system is set up so that some taxes, or it's set up so that some people, the entire gain for some people, I mean, it's supposed to be only on the increase, but for some people, their tax, it's their entire gain for the year that's paid for the taxes. And so they have no gain. The gain was all that was supposed to be taxed, and now they're taking their gain and it all goes to taxes. In fact, you could probably guess that's probably the majority of people, represents the majority of people in America today. However, interesting, you go back far enough, and the definitions for income, I gave you the modern definitions out of the modern dictionaries, but if you go further enough back, and you'll find that the definitions for income were more in line with Yahweh's idea of an increase. For example, let's take Webster's again, but let's now go back to the 1828 dictionary, and you'll notice that there's a definite difference between this definition and the definition I took out of the 2000 Webster's dictionary. Webster's 1828 dictionary, income, that gain which proceeds from labor. business or property of any kind, the produce of a farm, the rent of houses, the proceeds of professional business, the profits of commerce or of occupation, the interest of money or stock in funds. Also, let's go to Bouvier's Law Dictionary, 1914. Income is described as, starts off, very first two words, the gain which proceeds from property, labor, or business. It is applied particularly to individuals. The income of the state or government is usually called revenue. The word is sometimes, the word that is income, is sometimes considered synonymous with profits. The gain as between receipts and payments. It's talking about the increase, and at that time, that's what income was. But as in all things, when man has control of the words and the definitions and what they can do with the power of words, and do not ever believe or think that words do not have power. You don't have to be chained with literal chains. You don't have to be carrying around a ball and chain behind you to be encumbered and enslaved with such things. Men are much easier and very liable to be enslaved simply with the manipulation of words. Everybody thinks income is everything I take in. Where in one case, and in one instance, if we go back further enough, we find out that income was only the increase. And you know, as always is the fact, the further, usually, in most cases, the further back you go, the closer you get to biblical definitions. In fact, if you go back far enough, you know what where you end up? You end up with just the Bible. What a grandiose idea. Let's just end up with the Bible. Let's forget about all the rest of it, and let's just go back to the Bible, where we know it's perfect. Now, there is another biblical text that's many times, even from a biblical perspective, that isn't often discussed. But there is another biblical tax in addition to the 10% tax or tithe on one's increase. It's what might be called the flat tax or the poll tax, or even better yet, the flat poll tax. Let's turn and let's read about this one in Exodus chapter 30. Exodus chapter 30. Looking at, and again, the purpose of this is to look at biblical tax contrasted to the taxes we have today. And in so doing, you can see how what we have today is theft. It's inequity. It's unjust. And it's theft from the people. Whereas God's system was perfect and was very limited as far as what it required of the people. Exodus chapter 30, beginning with verse 11, it says, "And Yahweh spake unto Moses, saying, When thou takest the sum of the children of Israel after their number," it's talking about a census here, "then shall they give every man a ransom for his soul unto Yahweh, when thou numberest them, that there be no plague among them when thou numberest them." Now, I hadn't thought about it before, but if you remember when David took the unlawful census, a lot of people say it was all just a pride issue on his part. He wanted to see how many he had in his kingdom and what was his war power. And it may have been that. But I'm not so sure now it was that Joab knew. Joab rebelled against it. As bad as Joab was, he still recognized, listen, if you're going to do this, you better take a ransom. You better make sure that this poll tax is taken care of, or God's going to bring a plague upon, just like he did upon the people. Continuing, this may, verse 13, "This they shall give, every one that passes under them that are numbered," excuse me, this shall they give, "every one that passes among them that are numbered, half a shekel after the shekel of the sanctuary," a shekel is 20 gerahs, "and a half shekel shall be the offering of Yahweh. Every one that passes among them that are numbered from 20 years old and above shall give an offering unto Yahweh. The rich shall not give more, and the poor shall not give less than half a shekel when they give an offering unto Yahweh to make an atonement for your souls." Verse 16, "And thou shalt take the atonement money of the children of Israel and shall appoint it for a service of the tabernacle of the congregation, that it may be a memorial unto the children of Israel before Yahweh to make an atonement for your souls." Now, it doesn't use the word tax there, but that's a tax. Okay, now, there are a few things to note concerning this tax. First, this tax was a poll tax. Now, not a P-O-L-E tax. You know, it wasn't like as if only the bean poles were going to be taxed in society. But it was a P-O-L-L tax. Now, who can tell me what poll means or stands for? Anybody know what it means? Well, it was a head tax. As a poll means, you know, the pole on a horse. You think of a pole on a horse. It's a head tax is what it is. So every head in Israel was to be taxed, right? Well, some say no, some say yes. It's no and yes, depending upon one's use of the word head. And I hope you'll find this interesting. Exodus 30, 12, and 14. Note again what it says. When you take a census of the sons of Israel to number them, and each one of them shall give a ransom for himself, for himself to Yahweh, when you number them, that there be no plague among them when you number them. Jump down to verse 14. Everyone who is numbered from 20 years old and over shall give the contribution to Yahweh. In other words, only men. In fact, only men of accountable age, 20 years and older. And therefore, women and all female children and all male children under the age of 20 were exempt from this tax. Well, why is that? That seems unfair. That seems discriminatory against men, all the women scream. Sure they do. Today's women, present company accepted, only scream when, in their estimation, they're the ones being discriminated against. They don't give a hoot or make a peep. Hooters or peepers, I don't care which. But they don't give a hoot or make a peep when it comes to discrimination, when the discrimination is against men. Have you noticed that? Or even when it's an infant in the mother's womb who's being discriminated against. But they scream bloody murder when they think they're the ones being discriminated against. And by the way, the only time this occurs is when they insist upon living and working in a man's realm. Now, is there discrimination at times that occurs therein, in those situations? You bet there is. But that's only because they've invaded a man's realm. Now, the government, our current government and situation has forced many women to go into that position who wouldn't want to. So keep in mind, I'm not talking about all women here under our current situation. But nonetheless, the discrimination is there because whether voluntarily, as it is with most women, or forced to do it because of our government's economic situation that we find ourselves in, it's still, the discrimination is because women are in the realm of men where they don't belong. Under Yahweh's system, that is, His patriarchal system, women, or I should say females of all ages, were to always have a male, a head. Now, before I finish that statement, isn't that what Paul identified men as in 1 Corinthians chapter 11? 1 Corinthians 11, verse 3, here's what it says. But I want you to understand that Christ is the head of every man, and man is the head of every woman. And God is the head of Christ. Now that takes us right back to this head tax. People don't read the Old Testament, don't know the Old Testament, would never know that Paul's dealing with some of the same stuff here that concerns the head tax. Under Yahweh's patriarchal system, females of all ages were to always have a male, a head, covering them. And for any woman who's kind of woman liberated, hey, you ought to say, hey, I don't want to be liberated. That means I get taxed. If I'm liberated, that means I've left the covering of a husband or a father, and I'm out there doing my own thing, and then I should be taxed. They don't know what they've asked for. Now back to my former statement, and let's see if I can't get all the way through without running down another trail here. But under Yahweh's patriarchal system, females of all ages were always to have a male, a head covering them, that is, providing for them and protecting them. And therefore, Yahweh's system demands that only the head of each household be taxed. How different that is from today's system. Because The reason being is because the head of each household, the patriarch, if you will, of each of any given household represented in himself everyone whom he covered or was head over, in some cases head over heels over. On the other hand, today's unethical, unjust tax system demands that each and every person with an in quote unquote income, as they define the term, in each and every house is to be taxed. And it's only going to get worse, by the way. Taxation never gets better. Which, if you think about it, is also just another sophisticated, slick way, a way of the world to undermine each and every father's and husband's husband as the head of his wife and his children and replace him with the government as head of that household. It's also a subtle. You ever thought about the word subtle? Again, it's one of those just like sophisticated. It's changed over time. You know what subtle means? Go look it up in the dictionary. One of the primary definitions of it is sly or crafty. And it's just another subtle way in which the family and their loyalties are splintered or fragmented, somewhat akin to the women's vote and what it's done. It's done the same thing. Instead of one head, one vote for one family, keeping that family together under the headship of the husband. I know people like the fact that women, I mean, we've been brainwashed to think, well, it's only right. Well, it's also ungodly because it divides the family in many cases where you have the husband on very important religious issues, because spiritual issues, because there is nothing that the government is involved in that's not spiritual. It's morality, and in often cases it's splitting the husband and the wife on some very important issues as they take different positions and vote. That's another message for another time. But more of it's akin to that. It does a similar, maybe not quite as blatantly, but it does the same thing to a degree. Moreover, such taxes, once again, unlawfully secures. Once again, let's just call it for what it is. Confiscates. It steals more of a family's profits. And ultimately, the inheritance of that family and the posterity as well. And then, in addition, often takes it and gives it away to others to whom that either the profits or the inheritance doesn't belong, and or to programs and organizations that are often ungodly and wicked and that the family does not endorse, such as, for example, Planned Parenthood, that finances and promotes the murdering of our babies in the womb. And so it takes it and not only gives it to someone it doesn't belong to. You talk about ungodly, but how much more ungodly when it gives it to that which even destroys families, destroys the future posterity of a nation. Rushdoony in the Institutes of Biblical Law on page 514 wrote this. He said, if the church collects the tax, the tithe is a tax, don't be mistaken. And in early America, the tax was all given to the church. That's the only tax, and it was the church's responsibility. And he said, if the church collects the tax, the church rules society. Nobody thinks about that. If the state collects the state rules society. Wonder why the state wanted to take that burdensome thing of taxing off the church's hands. Oh, they were so kind and benevolent. They were looking out for the church, for the Christians. Since when? Since when has the government ever done that? Government made of man, anyway. He continues, if, however, the people of God administer the tithe to godly agencies, then God's rule prevails in the social order. Put it back where it belongs, and it works much better, and we have a godly society. But Christians have turned dominion over for whatever reason, under whatever guise, or it doesn't matter, but they've turned dominion over instead to the ungodly. The Bible provides very clearly with what we've already seen thus far. The Bible provides for neither an income tax nor a tax on each and every person. But what about this graduated? What's, you know, most people, it's a graduated income tax. They don't give any thought to what that means. It's a graduated text. Oh, by the way, let me throw this in here real quick. Look at Protocols 20 of the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, and guess whose idea it was for income? A graduated income tax. And property tax as well. Protocol, you can read it for yourself. Protocol number 20. But what about this graduated tax? That is an increase in the income tax with an increase in quote-unquote income as they define the terms. Or as the government puts it itself, quote, an increase along with the taxable base, which is just a slick, sophisticated way of saying the more you make, the more you pay, right? You guys won't bite on it. No. That's what the government wants those who have gone, who have got beyond just putting up with this sordid tax and who have begun to question either its legality or lawfulness. That's what the government wants them to think that it is. Think about it. Yahweh's tax on one's increase is actually a tax that requires more from those who make more. Does it not? Sure it does. 10% if you only made $100. 10% of $100 is only $10. Whereas 10% of $1,000 is $100. And 10% of $1,000,000 is $100,000. Therefore, under Yahweh's system, the more you make, the more you pay. But under America's graduated income tax, it's the more you make, the greater percentage you pay. Under Yahweh's system, it's a flat 10%. Not under this system. Which is nothing but a, under this system, the more you make, the greater percentage you pay, is which is nothing. And this is what many people miss. It's nothing but a leveling mechanism for making everyone as equal as they can. Because, listen, it's just flat wrong for someone to have more or make more than someone else does. That's what people think. At least some of society. But that mindset is the exact opposite of Yahweh's. Remember Luke 19:26 in the parable of the talents? What did he say? He says, I tell you that to everyone who has shall be given more. Everyone who has shall be given more. But from the one who does not have, the one who's not industrious, the one who's not entrepreneurial, for everyone that does not have, even what he does have shall be taken away from him. The exact opposite of this communist system we live in today, because they want to take from the haves and give it to the have-nots. God says, no, take from the have-nots and give it to the haves. And whatever you do, don't let them eat. Because you know what? Then they'll go and out become the haves. Them's buying their on their own initiative. It's not like God didn't care about them. He cared about them. He says, go out and use your talents and make something of yourself. Not just looking for a handout that was stolen from somebody else who has the initiative to go out and do it. To man's natural, which is just another way for saying carnal, way of thinking, it's inequitable if one excels or prospers above others. Would you dare do something better than I do? It's just, which comes from the pride of life. And therefore, the increase in the percentage, and therefore, the increase in the percentage, the thrifty or the industrious is taxed. Whereas to Yahweh, it's inequitable to tax a greater percentage of one man than another. Because, you see, it almost seems unfair for one man to pay only, say, a dollar or $10 or $1,000. Another guy to have to pay $100,000. But in a sense, they've paid exactly the same. $100,000 to $1,000,000 is the same as $1 is to $10. It's equitable under Yahweh's system. Additionally, America's current system not only robs a greater amount from the industrious and the diligent, but it also discourages, it curbs individual ambition, enterprise, and initiative. You know, why the idea is, why try to better myself or better my position if I'm only going to be penalized for it? And in case someone doesn't think that the present tax system doesn't deter enterprise, just ask yourself, or let me ask you, would you like to pay less taxes? Everybody'd like to pay less taxes. Well, think about it. The only way for the average man to pay less taxes is to make less money. Now, you think it doesn't deter enterprise? It certainly does if you want to pay less taxes. Someone once compared golfing to taxes and put it this way. You drive hard to get to the green only to wind up in the hole. Pretty good analogy. Or someone else put it that income is the fine for reckless thriving. And also don't be fooled by the government when they legislate tax reform. That's just that sounds good. Hey, they're going to have tax reform. Hallelujah. Well, tax reform is when you take taxes off things that you've been taxing and put them on taxes on things that haven't been taxed. That's all it is. I don't know if you've heard of the ultimate tax reform that's being planned for some time in the future. And in fact, they've already came up with a simplified tax form, or simplified 1040 form. I don't know if you can see it or not, but there you see. You can at least see the simplified 1040, latest revision for the 1040 Department of the Internal Revenue Service. And it has, of course, your income, a place for your income, and then your Social Security number. And it only has two questions. Who would like to fill out an form like this? You know, only two questions on a 1040. Everybody says, yeah. You don't know the questions yet. Number one question, how much money did you make last year? Fill in the blank. Number two, send it in. That's eventually where they would like to take it. Now, Yahweh's system is first equitable. Don't miss this. It's perfect to begin with. And the reason, one of the reasons it's perfect is because his tax system is equitable. Everyone pays the same percentage in tithe or tax on only the increase, or the exact same amount for a poll or head tax, no matter how well off a person may be. Now, and isn't that what we read? I want to make sure that we get this in Exodus chapter 30. Listen to it again in case you missed it. Compare it, contrast it to the graduated income tax. Where in Exodus 30, 14 through 15, he said, everyone who is numbered from 20 years old and over, remember that's only of male gender, shall give the contribution to Yahweh. The rich shall not pay more. The poor shall not pay less than the half shekel when you give the contribution to Yahweh to make atonement for yourselves. God's system was perfectly equitable, whereas now the industrious under this system are not only penalized, but literally has their money stolen from to try to equalize everyone else in America. Exodus 30, 14 and 15. That's equity, a word that's completely foreign to today's bureaucrats, politicians, lawyers, judges, and legislators. Or more likely, they have just chosen to ignore its meaning, and therefore they can time and again, quote unquote, justify another sophisticated way to steal from you and your posterity. May Yahweh hasten the day. May Yahweh hasten the day that our people wake up and see how superior his ways, his laws, and his morality is compared or contrasted with man's ways, laws, and immorality. Unjust, unequitable system that it is. Amen? Amen. Let's stand and we'll close in prayer. Heavenly Father, we are thankful that you are perfect and your word and your law is perfect as well. Father, help us, and especially the Christians, to be able to see that across this land, that we need to return to you by returning to your laws. Not to be justified, only Christ can provide that. But Father, to be able to, Father, live as you intended us to live in the most free and equitable fashion that can be found under the face of heaven, because it's your system. Bless us and guide us. Help us to be, Father, not only ones who would understand this, but that would help others to understand and see it as well. Use these messages for that purpose, to open eyes, to awaken minds, to bring our people back to you as they should be. We praise you now and ask these things in Yeshua the Christ. Amen.